A woman in the hospital to deliver a baby can take advantage of the medical attention and leave the hospital with contraceptive in place. The medical science is certainly there. What is not there in some cases is the ability to pay for the procedure, especially if Medicaid is the woman's health insurer. A University of Michigan health system study found that Medicaid does cover contraception after birth in more states over time. Dr. Michelle Elena Moniz is an assistant professor of obstetrics and gynecology at the University of Michigan and our guest on The Exchange. Dr. Moniz, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
So let's talk about the procedure first. I want to understand, so women come to the hospital to give birth and get birth control before they're discharged?
That's right. So after a delivery of a baby, a woman who wants a long-acting reversible contraceptive method, such as an intrauterine device or the contraceptive implant, can choose to have that device provided to her right then and there during that delivery hospitalization before she goes home with her baby.
And how long has this approach been in use?
This approach has been available to women for quite some time, although there has been growing evidence over the past 10 to 20 years about the safety of this option and in even more recent years about the potential cost effectiveness of this option.
And is the safety fairly well insured? I mean, hospitals wouldn't be doing it if they didn't think it was safe. I'm just, you know, it's been studied, it sounds like, fairly rigorously.
Yes, absolutely. There's a large body of medical data that suggests that for the contraceptive implant, that's a birth control method that is inserted in the upper arm, and that insertion is identical in postpartum women soon after delivery as well as at any other time. The insertion of the intrauterine device, that's a birth control method that is placed inside the uterus, and we do that placement in the outpatient setting all the time, and it's very similar after a vaginal delivery. You can imagine it's a little bit different after a cesarean delivery, but still very safe. There's very good data that shows that insertion of these devices is not associated with increased risk of complications such as infection or other potential complications of the insertion, whether we do it in the outpatient setting or in the inpatient setting.
Are there any particular issues with IUDs any longer? Those of us who lived through the 70s and 80s can remember issues with the Dalcon Shield, for example.
The Dalcon Shield is not the device we currently use.
Oh, yeah, I know it's been out. Yeah,
yeah,
long
you're
time.
Absolutely. And I know there are many folks that have concerns about that, and there are still many, there's a lot of misinformation about intrauterine devices. That said, I think IUDs are kind of having a moment right now. They're becoming a lot more popular. They have, when you look nationally at the use of intrauterine devices, they made up about 2% of devices back in 2002, and that number has jumped all the way up to about 12% most recently in 2012. And so these devices are becoming much more common in the United States because they are clearly safe, and they are some of the most effective forms of reversible birth control. So IUDs and implants have a very, very, very low chance of an unintended pregnancy. And so these methods have become much more popular because they're helping women effectively meet their childbearing goals.
Dr. Michelle Helena Moniz is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Assistant Professor of Obstetrics and Gynecology at the University of Michigan. We're talking about long-acting reversible birth control applied in the hospital while the woman is there to give birth. You can join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Is the time window fairly narrow given that the hospital stays tend to be fairly short these days?
That's a great question. So for IUDs that are placed soon after childbirth, we recommend that the IUD is placed within 10 minutes of the delivery of the placenta. So it's quite a tight window indeed. The implant can be inserted at any point during that delivery hospitalization, which for most women is a 24 to 48-hour hospital stay. But the procedure itself, for both devices, the insertion procedure is really quick. It is very well tolerated by women, and so it's a convenient option for women who desire these methods to go ahead and have them placed right at the time of their delivery.
I can imagine you need to make the decision about the IUD before you get to the hospital, though, or you know, because if it's a 10-minute window, you're not necessarily in the feeling the best to be able to make the decision on the spot.
That's absolutely right. So this is a big decision for a woman and potentially her partner to be making. And we have, as I'm an OBGYN and as a maternity care provider, I have the luxury of seeing my patients at many points during their prenatal care. And so that affords a lot of opportunities to clarify an individual woman's childbearing plans and her preferences and values in terms of a birth control method, in terms of both the effectiveness of that method, potential side effects or non-contraceptive benefits of that method. And so we talk a lot about that in the office setting. And the goal is for every woman, as a part of her prenatal care, to have a plan for postpartum birth control even before she delivers.
Okay, now the heart of all this is getting insurance to cover it. Did you study Medicaid and private insurance or just Medicaid?
Our study focused specifically on Medicaid. So we contacted Medicaid agencies across the United States, and we found that since 2012, we've gone from zero to now 19 Medicaid agencies providing enhanced payments for IUDs and implants that are given to women soon after their childbirth. We also found that an additional 8 agencies are considering this kind of enhanced payment. And this is a really striking evolution in just a short period of time.
And I'm wondering about the states that are slow to embrace. Did you have any sense for whether it's ideological, economic, medical, or just they haven't turned their attention to it yet or something like that?
That's a great question. I'd say yes to a lot of those things. I think for many states, there are some states that were less familiar with some of the medical and health benefits of long-acting reversible contraceptive options like the intrauterine device or the implant. There were some agencies that had some concerns that this might not be appropriate for postpartum women who might be breastfeeding or might be at risk for depression. But the take-home message is that the medical data is actually very clear that these devices are safe for postpartum women. They are highly effective at helping women avoid unintended pregnancy and meet their childbearing goals. And there's emerging data that immediate provision of these devices is actually cost savings. And so it's beneficial not just for individual patients and families, but for communities and for taxpayers.
And what are the general prospects then for a woman who is on Medicaid but can't get coverage in her state for the procedure while she's in the hospital for delivery to then come back and get the procedure done later on?
Right. Well, the traditional way of providing these devices to women after childbirth has been to have women come back for their postpartum visit, which we usually do at around 6 weeks postpartum, and they come into the office, and we would provide them with the IUD or the implant at that time. And that's certainly still an option to women if their insurance provider doesn't provide coverage for this in the inpatient setting. But the challenge is for many postpartum women, for whom their first choice is an IUD or an implant, they may have a lot of barriers to getting back into the office for that outpatient visit. They may face transportation challenges. They may live far away from their healthcare provider. They may have used all of their sick leave to take a few weeks off and be with their newborn, and they may not have time off of work to come into the office. They may have childcare barriers, and we know many low-income women lose their insurance coverage at 60 days postpartum. And so if anything prevents them from being able to get into the office during that window of time, these preferred contraceptive methods are then effectively out of their reach.
Dr. Michelle Moniz is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, assistant professor of obstetrics and gynecology at the University of Michigan. So some comparison then would be helpful here. And as we talk about Medicaid and whether it does or does not cover the application of long-acting reversible contraceptive when the woman is in the hospital to deliver a child, are there restrictions on other methods of contraception? I mean, is there a bit of picking and choosing, as you find, among Medicaid operations in different states?
Well, generally speaking, most delivery-related care is provided with a global bundled payment. And that's where things get a little bit sticky with providing IUDs and implants, because these devices, although cost-effective in the long term, are associated with high upfront costs. The devices themselves are quite expensive, more expensive, say, than a package of birth control pills or, you know, the contraceptive shot that some women choose. And so because of those upfront costs, that's why these reimbursement issues are a potential really critical barrier. And we know from a variety of data, not my study in particular, but a variety of other data, that removing reimbursement barriers can really help women access the most effective forms of birth control and meet their childbearing goals.
Is it true that often Medicaid will cover permanent contraception, you know, tubal ligation, things like that, rather than the short term, the long acting reversible that we're talking about here?
That's correct. So many Medicaid agencies and other payers provide coverage for tubal sterilization procedures that are performed during the same hospitalization as a delivery. They do provide payment specifically for that service. But may not provide payment for these long-acting reversible options in the inpatient setting, separate from their traditional payment for all of the other delivery-related care.
Is there any advocacy that comes with your study, Dr. Moniz? I mean, is there any push to try to convince states that this is an option that women like and that is relatively cost-effective and safe?
Well, we have certainly been reaching out to the public and to policymakers at both our state level and nationally to try to make sure that they understand that the medical literature on health benefits of this type of policy is very clear, and to understand that there may potentially be cost savings for their Medicaid agency in adopting these kind of reimbursement changes. I have heard from quite a few women's health care providers and researchers and in other states who are hoping to advocate for this kind of policy change locally at the state level.
All right. We've learned a lot today. Dr. Michelle Helena Moniz is an NMD and assistant professor of obstetrics and gynecology at the University of Michigan. Thanks for the study, and thanks for joining us on The Exchange to talk about it.
Thanks so much for having me. It was my pleasure.
All right. Take care.